to Coffee and Reason podcast, where conversations are as bold as the coffee we brew, and the reasoning is as deep as the thoughts we share. So, buckle up as we embark on yet another journey of courage, hope, and the unwavering human spirit. Here, every story is a testament to the fact that no storm lasts forever, and in the face of adversity, we can not only survive, but thrive. Welcome to episode 7 of the adversity series of this podcast. I'm your host, Nurse Douglas Atkinson, and with me is your co-host, Sharona McKenzie. As we embark on this caffeinated journey of dialogue and discovery, let's center ourselves with our podcast mantra, brewing resilience and sipping strength, one cup at a time. Our guest today is one with a story worth sharing, a story that will strengthen you to believe that you can grow through anything you go through. Sipping with us today is Miss Alia McKenzie. She is an operations officer at the NPC Bank and the owner of the small business Ali's Homework Aid. Growing up, Alia had her heart set on achieving high academic performances. However, she dropped out of university due to unforeseen health issues. Life began to look bleak, and she did not see how she would overcome all that she was enduring at the time, only to find herself a few years later, society's definition of successful. Miss McKenzie endured chronic depression during the latter part of her teenage years, and at the age of 21, she became a mother just after overcoming depression. What might be going through her mind, you might think? That this is all a recipe for disaster, or so she thought. Join with us as we live vicariously through Alia as she navigates dropping out of school, health issues, chronic depression, unemployment, and pregnancy stigma. Welcome to the platform, Alia. We are delighted to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Good night, everyone. Good night to the listeners. Good night to our host and co-host. And I am absolutely delighted to be your guest.
We are happy to have you. And we are completely intrigued by what you have to share with us as well. You went through quite a lot. Many might think that is something that will definitely throw you down to the floor and to not get back up for any time soon. However, you seem to have triumphed a whole lot. So I guess what we want to know is to start at, or what we want to do rather, is to start at the very beginning. You mentioned that you started university. However, you had to stop due to health issues. How long into university were you before that had happened?
I was not far into university, to be honest. I was in my first semester of university. I had just started. I had gone through September and October. We were mid-November when I started having these health issues. They were chronic, not mild. I was feeling a lot of pain. I was unable to walk majority of the times, and I was living on dorm. So, you know, there wasn't that extreme support that you'd get if you were close by home from family. So I had a friend who we have been friends since primary school, going together. And she was also there with me, living on the same dorm, going to the same university. We were just pursuing different majors. And she was becoming extremely worried with the how chronic my health was becoming. And she, one of the days I had class, an ATM class, and I didn't turn up at my ATM class because I was unable to move from the position I was in. I was completely, I felt crippled. I couldn't move. And she came to my room around midday and she saw me and she called my parents because she was extremely worried about it, and she didn't want to keep it from them. So she had called them. And when she called them, I could not have believed that they would have gotten to U-Tech that quickly. But they got there and they packed my belongings and they brought me to the doctor. The doctor gave me a few medication for the pain, and then he wrote another prescription that should allow me to feel a little better for a period of time, but I would have to get some blood tests done, some x-rays done, and along with some other things. This was something that sent me into depression, because if you know me, or if you've known me since childhood, I was the smart sibling, per se. So I grew up with a brother who was the fix-it Felix. If there was anything that needed fixing, you could always give it to him. So if his if school didn't work out for him, you could always have that to fall back on.
He had a backup plan.
And I grew up with a sister. Right. I had a sister who could cook anything, who could bake anything. She was the definition of chef. And she could pursue that if education didn't work out for her. But for me, education was my go-to. It was my backup plan. It was my everything. So when this happened, I did not know what else to do. So I fell into a serious depression, a state that I don't think many people could attest to feeling the way I did during that period of time. Many people might say that is not something to feel depressed about. But for me, as I said, it was not just my main plan. It was also my backup plan.
Mm-hmm.
There was no other plan but that. So when I failed to even complete my first semester of school, knowing I was working hard and it was extremely hard to financially cover the first semester, and I had to drop out, I was going crazy. I was going crazy.
Oh my. You, whoa. 3 years into university, as a teenager or just coming out of high school, without the thought of even your future, the thought of going to university alone is thrilling, and that alone is bringing you through the first year. So I can just imagine how many factors played in all of that. And to be in a state where you can't even move because of pain, whoa.
Whoa. It was very serious. And the blood test showed nothing. The x-rays showed nothing. But the pain that I felt was something. It was something.
To feel pain to the point where you can't even move and you don't know where the source is. Whoa. That was a lot to go through, even without thinking about your future. That in itself was a lot to go through. And then you had to literally just pack up and leave. So there's this shock in between just starting university, then becoming ill, and then all of a sudden, I'm not there at school no more. That's a whole shock itself.
Right. It wasn't a pause. It was a full withdrawal, because I wouldn't be completing any exams. I wouldn't have been doing anything that I should have been doing to complete the semester. As I said, it was literally mid-November when I started having these issues, and it wasn't even time for exams as yet. It was close, but it wasn't time. So I was shocked when I had to pack up, to the point where, like, I actually couldn't believe that this was happening. I wanted to just put back everything where they came from. I was, some of the times I was even contemplating running away and going back to school, even though I don't know where the money is going to come from.
Imagine someone wanting to run to school.
School was my thing. School was always my thing.
I can see that. And the very fact that you had no way to go back, even if you had the money, the physical issues that you were going through, it wasn't going to allow you to go back into that space. So you were at a halt right there. I can just imagine how that affected you mentally. You mentioned that it was mainly because that was your plan A, B, and C, right? But what about the loss of friends that you had made? Was that a factor as well as to why you fell into that state of depression?
Well, to be honest with you, I was so focused on education that even the persons who I lived on dorm with, I formed friendships with some, but not many. And even the friendships I formed, they weren't close. It wasn't a strong bond where, oh, if I stop coming, I would fall into this depression because I'm not able to see you as often and I'm not able to bond with you.
Mm-hmm.
The only issue, the thing that brought me into that state of depression was definitely because I thought that there was a deadline to my success.
Wow.
I thought that I had a plan for my life.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I left high school, I would be going into university. I counted the years. So I know, okay, by 2023, I should be finished.
Mm-hmm.
In 2024, I would be working.
Mm-hmm.
In 2025, I'd have my house and my vehicle. And those are the deadlines that I set for myself. I had a deadline for my success. And if I had to stop going to school, that meant that I would not be meeting that deadline. I did not know if there was another way for me to become successful after I dropped out of university. Because as I said, that was my only avenue to becoming successful in my eyes.
Wow. So to actually hear someone put it in a sentence, I thought that was the only way I could become successful. The very thought of it, I can understand why it was so detrimental at that point in time, because you saw your life literally stop before your eyes when you fell out into that that state. You literally dropped out of school and went into a state of depression because you saw yourself not becoming someone that you aspired to be. And that's truly deep. That's really, really deep. So where the chronic depression is concerned, how long did that state last?
One of the things, apart from the fact that I dropped out of university and I was no longer seeing greatness in my future, I also found it hard to find a job after I started feeling better.
Mm-hmm.
So after the health issues subsided,
and how long
I
after
was having difficulty finding a job. So it took about until February. I think it was February
mm-hmm.
that I started feeling better. February of 2020, I started feeling right.
Okay.
I started feeling much better. It felt like I was healing in February. That's how I felt in February. And after the health issues subsided, I was now having depression because, one, the avenue to my future was closed. Secondly, I had been sending out job application letters and resumes, and I wasn't getting any form of response from anyone. Third, everyone else in the house was working. And because of this, I was alone majority of the time. And when the mind is idle, you do a lot of overthinking.
Mm-hmm.
You start doubting yourself, you start doubting your abilities, and you start even doubting God.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the things that brought me down into the deep well of depression that I was in. And I was in serious depression, and I really wanted to put up this facade. I didn't want anyone to see that this was happening because I didn't want to burden anyone with my problems. Because maybe to you, what I'm going through is minor, but to me, it was something major. So because I didn't want to seem as if I was stressing over something as petty as dropping out of university to others, I put on this facade. So if you ask persons who would see me on a daily for those months of depression, they would tell you, not never do, because I'd still smile. And there was this one person from my past who I reconnected with during my period of depression that continued to encourage me. That person reminded me who I was in high school, because as I said, in high school, I was that A student, that honor roll person, that first place on report card person. So this person was reminding me about who I was back then and that there was still hope. So this person encouraged me through this phase of depression. And this lasted up until I found this depression lasted up until I actually heard back from one of those businesses that I had applied to.
And how long was that?
So I was in a depression for, I did not hear back till September.
Wow.
That was the end of September. Yes, I did not hear back till the end of September. And I had to, during the interview, I had to even hold the faith because they were asking me questions such as, will you be able to work on Sunday? And Sundays are my church days. And I don't really give up my church days for anything. And I knew in my head that maybe it wouldn't really work on a Sunday. But in my head, I'm saying, which one is better? Is it better to work on a few Sundays or not have anything to do and fall deeper into depression? Because right now you're doubting God.
Mm-hmm.
You're doubting God. So is it okay to be going to church and still doubting? But I'm here and I'm saying, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to say yes, work on Sundays. And then when I get the job, now I can work around it.
Mm-hmm.
I did extremely well in the interview and I was given the opportunity. I went for training and when I came back, I was happy. I was the happiest person you could find. And it wasn't a big job. I was now working at a gas station and I felt amazing. It felt great. I was out of the house. I didn't have time to overthink anything anymore. I was working. I was making the money. I was happy when I saw my first paycheck because this made me feel like there was hope. There was no hope.
You mentioned that you stopped going to school mid-November. I understand that first semester would have finished in December. For some courses, you may not be able to start to, I don't know, pick up, I'm guessing, in the fall semester. So you'd have to follow up back in this September. But was going back to school no longer in the cards because of your financial situation? Because you did mention prior to that, financing it in the first place was a little difficult.
Yes. The school thing would have had to be put on pause because of my financial state. No, and it was no longer a health problem anymore. It was a financial problem. I didn't know where the first dollar would be coming from. And the only way to actually be able to finance it was if I had gotten a job. And as I said, I had been searching for a job for a long time and I didn't get a job until September. I didn't hear back until September and I started working fully in October. So that was almost a year after I dropped out that I found a job. And, you know, the pay, it wasn't something that I could say, all right, I'm going to take my time and put this down to go back to school. I could have, but it wasn't much. It wasn't much. But I was just happy to be out of the house, working, being of use to society again.
Where your depression was concerned, you mentioned that a big part of you getting through that state was encouragement from one of your friends that really, you know, had your back for that period of time. Was there anything else that helped you to get through? Because you made it known that overthinking really did not help. The unemployment added a lot of pressure on your back, plus the thought of what you had lost when you dropped out of school. Apart from your friend encouraging you, apart from him having, well, being your shoulder to lean on, and you mentioned having faith in Christ just the same, was there anything else that had helped you through that time?
Yes. I was always writing. I wrote everything and I wrote anything and I did just write it down on the paper. I wrote it in poetry. I wrote it in songs. And I couldn't really draw, but I could sketch. Mm-hmm. So I did a lot of sketching as well. These things allowed me to express myself. If I felt angry, I would write a poem a little aggressively. If I felt sad, I'd write the poem and a little teardrop would dry on that page. And if I felt happy, I would sketch along the lines of the poetry and I would write songs to sing. So those little things helped me through my depression as well. So I have a whole half book of poetry and songs that I wrote during my depression. And I would read them again whenever I felt down. So sometimes some of them were encouragements along the way. Some of them were just feeling how I felt. So whenever I felt that way again, I'd go back and read that one. Or I had some that were addressed to myself, my future self. Those were the things that I had to do to take myself out of a depression. Those helped me a lot.
Really powerful. Not many me know that that's a very effective way of coping, but just to hear it from your perspective, why did those work for you?
Well, I feel like getting your feelings out, not keeping them in, it helps you to work through the issues that you're having. I didn't feel like I could explain to anyone what I felt. I didn't feel like they'd understand, and I didn't feel like their response would help. So the only way I knew to cope without speaking to anyone, without saying it out loud, was to write it, reread it, think about what I'm going through, think about what I wrote on the page, and actually think of a solution.
Did you actually think of a solution?
It took some time for me to actually start thinking of solutions.
Mm-hmm.
It took writing a lot of them and then rereading them. And as I said before, this person who I had who was continuously encouraging me, it made me think of ways that I could actually solve the problems that I was having without. Because let me tell you, you see, as I said, an idle mind gives a lot of space to overthink. And overthinking leads to things such as suicide, thinking of suicide and that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the times I was at the edge of just that. I was at the edge of just that. And I could not say that to this person, because you're encouraging me every day. You're going to feel like you're not getting anywhere. And maybe you'll even think of not talking to me anymore if I say that. So that's where the writing helped a lot, because I wrote it down and then I thought about it. I thought about how the persons around me would feel if certain things should come to fruition. I thought of how, I thought of every other thing that would make doing this just, that was just not the answer.
Suicide is not uncommon when you're in a very trying situation, a place where you feel locked in, where you are surrounded by bars and you're not the one that's holding the key to the lock. So the only way to get out is to not exist. So that's not a very uncommon decision amongst individuals who are in such a desperate situation. So I can understand why you would have thought of that at one point or the other. But was there ever a point as to when you thought to yourself, you know, say, today I ate and I'm going to think Mega can deal with this no more? Did you ever get to the point where you actually thought of a way to take your life?
Yes, there were times when I thought of ways that I would do it. There were a lot of times that I thought I couldn't take what I was going through anymore. I felt like a burden. I felt like life was over. And I thought of every way that I could take my life without feeling any pain, because pain was the reason for all that I'm going through. So I would like a painless rather. So I thought of many painless ways, but all the times I thought of those ways, I thought of the people around me who would hurt. I couldn't even find money for university. How would they find money to bury me? I had to think of everything to discourage myself, because as much as I felt like I wanted to, mm-hmm. I knew in myself that I did not want that for me.
I just want to say thank you for sharing that. You laid yourself vulnerable. That was not easy. And you are actually very, very strong to have endured all of that and still be thinking about other individuals. Because the thing is with suicide, that not a lot of persons understand, nor will appreciate, it is not about the other person. It is not about how you would feel when that person is gone. It's not about what you would do with that person is God. It's not about how that person is wicked. So it's not about you. It's about the pain that they are enduring that will push them to the edge. So it's actually very, very admirable of you to be thinking of others in such a dire situation. And I just want to say, you are a powerful woman. Completely and utterly.
Thank you.
So you went through all of that. You endured it and you overcame it with a lot of help and a lot of self-talk. And then you found yourself pregnant with your baby girl that you have now. What was going through your mind when that happened?
All right. So I said I got the job in September. I got a response and I started working fully in October. By January of 2021, I was pregnant. How did I feel? I don't think at the time I felt sad, because majority of persons would say they made a mistake. However, I wouldn't say that. So I did not feel sad until I realized the backlash I was facing, the disappointed stares everywhere I went, the words, the verbal abuse. Mm-hmm. It was a lot to endure. So it wasn't the pregnancy. The pregnancy didn't make me sad. The pregnancy didn't make me depressed. But as a person who was a fully active member of the church community, as a person who was saved and born again, you know, there's a lot of backlash from the church, from persons who thought that, who saw you as more than you saw yourself. As persons who exemplified you, you see a lot of disappointed faces. You see people, you hear people talking about, I thought you would be working on going back to university and now you're pregnant. You see people saying, pick me, I'll go hold you back in a life. There is absolutely nothing that you're going to be, that you wanted to do that you'll be able to do now that you have a child. So it wasn't the pregnancy that made me depressed again. It was rather the stigma that surrounded a pregnant church girl. So during my pregnancy, I tried to stay away from any person who brought negative energy, because being pregnant is a very, very vulnerable stage of your life. You want to protect your peace and you want to protect your child as well. Because as soft as persons think words are, and persons think that words don't hurt, when you are not mentally stable during your pregnancy, you can also hurt the child that you carry. So I had to try my best to protect my peace during my pregnancy. I had to try my best. I had a very supportive partner during my pregnancy, so that helped a lot. However, as I said, there are persons in your life that had plans for you as well, and they show disappointed faces, and then everybody in the community is whispering, and then again, there's a backlash from the church. So there was a lot going on as it related to me and my pregnancy as well.
The outside noise was making much more noise than you were making inside your head.
It was because I wasn't depressed about it. I wasn't stressed about it. But the noise from the outside, as I said, the noise from the outside, it was deafening.
The Bible tells us that the tongue is a weapon and it's untamable. So where persons may think that words are just loose little pebbles or your throat, I don't know. It's a whole avalanche if you don't know how to handle it properly. Can I say that I'm sorry that you went through all of that? Because
you can, but I'm not.
To be in such a vulnerable state, and I can definitely understand, I can definitely empathize where persons might have been disappointed, because that's not where they had saw you going. I can definitely understand where persons may had been taken by surprise by the pregnancy. But even with that, we don't understand the level of influence that we have in another individual. Imagine how words, mere words, can destroy you. But you had mentioned that it was only for a period of time. You went back into a state of depression for about how long, and what exactly helped you to come back out?
It wasn't for long, to be honest. And the weirdest thing is the reason that I came out of my depression. When my child, when my baby girl started growing inside me, there was always this thing that she did. And probably if I tell you, you won't believe me. Whenever I feel sad, I would feel the baby move to the forefront of my stomach and she just laid there. It felt like a little hug. Aww. It always felt like a little hug. And no matter how bad I felt, I would always smile in that moment.
Oh my.
And every single time I can remember myself being sad during my pregnancy, I always felt that little movement to the front of my belly and the little hug that came after. And I searched deep, near and far for a name that was close to mine, but that meant something meaningful. And I searched and found her name. I searched and I found her name that was close to mine and that meant blessing from God, because she was.
And what name was that?
Her name is Aliana.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And it's also beautiful how the outside noise did not tear you down. It's admirable that the very thought of you bringing life into the world, it kept you afloat. That's pretty powerful.
It did. She kept me afloat. And correction with the name, I think it means God answers or God answered. So it's like there was something going on. I felt like it meant something to me. I was going through something and I asked God for a solution, and her name, God answered. That's the reason why I named her that.
My heart full. My heart completely full right now. Oh my God, that's actually really beautiful. That's a beautiful story. And in spite of how traumatizing that latter part of your teenage year was to the early part of your young adulthood, it's actually very beautiful. The strength, the power, the navigation, the fact that you went to the edge, but you got help coming back from the edge, that's very beautiful. And I just want to say that thank you for still being here. Thank you for still pouring into others, even though at times you still want others to pour into you and they don't know. Thank you for being an amazing individual and for still trusting in God. Now, as we look to say goodbye, I just want to ask you a few more questions before we close. Let's say that you are talking to your adolescent self right now. What are some practical steps that you would give yourself to navigate whatever that you'd be going through?
The first thing I'd actually tell myself, and I tell anyone who goes through anything that I have been through, is to work at your own pace. Go at your own pace. Dropping out of university, I always thought that I would never meet society's definition of successful. Until today's date, I know that I will never meet society's definition of successful. But you know what I know is that I know that I'm currently living in a part of my success story that is written by God. And there's no eraser on earth that can erase the story that I am born to live. No, when you pace yourself, you work at your own pace. You don't force yourself to do things the way society wants you to do it. Take your time. I forced myself to, I was so focused on education and meeting this invisible deadline that society set for my success that I didn't even realize that I was not living life. I was not forming meaningful bonds. I wasn't forming any meaningful friendships. I was just going through life blinded by where I wanted to be. So I would tell my younger self to pace yourself. Work at your own pace. If it doesn't happen now, it doesn't mean it will never happen. It just means it will happen at a timing that is better. I would also tell my younger self that the plan that you set for yourself will only come true if that plan aligns with the plan that God has for you. Because, one, the plans that God has for us are way bigger and way better than the ones that we have for ourselves. And sometimes we allow ourselves to make plans that God has no part in. And this causes us a lot more pain than we needed to face during our life journey. So I'd say, one, to pace myself. And two, to ensure that whatever plan that I have aligns with the plan that God has for my life.
That was a very, very, very powerful statement. We just want to thank you for sharing with us today, sharing with us being so vulnerable, diving into how depression had a hold on you for a while, led you to suicidal ideation, but you resurfaced. You resurfaced as a strong individual. You found yourself through journaling, through writing music, through poetry, which is really beautiful. You found yourself when someone else helped you just the same, and you did not allow outside noise to bring you down because you knew that God had a greater purpose for your life. And we just want to say thank you so much for sharing such a powerful story with us.
Thank you for having me.
You are most welcome. So thank you all for tuning into another episode of Mekwa Coffee and Reason. And if you like what you have heard thus far, please remember to like, share, and subscribe to our podcast channels on all platforms. Leave a comment under each episode to let us know how this podcast episode had impacted you. And feel free to send us a message on Instagram at Mekwa Coffee and Reason or via email at schoolnursedouglas@gmail.com with the names and contacts of those who would you like to see next Reason with us. Or if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss in the Mekwa Reason series, let us know just the same. So as we say hello to a brand new week, let's remember our podcast mantra. We are all brewing resilience and sipping strength, one cup at a time. As the week goes on, allow the aroma of freshly brewed coffee to inspire authentic conversations, and may each episode leave you with a sense of connection, reflection, and a renewed appreciation for the simple joy of sharing thoughts over a cup of coffee. See you next Sunday on the Mekwa Coffee and Reason podcast.